Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
I'm like, is there some big announcement I don't know about what's happening?
Is it welcome to the Bear Grease Podcast? Yes.
I think it would be appropriate to describe our external environment today.
Okay, go, start
before
us
we
off.
Start. Well, when I took the long trek from our house to the world headquarters, or also known as Meat Eater South, it was slick. There was active sleet ice falling. And for Arkansas, you know, it takes about, well, none of that for us to cancel. Today
That's
we canceled
right.
school
right.
bright and early because,
Threats.
Yeah, because it was misty outside. And I thought it was a good call.
It's misty in here.
It's misty in here. Oh.
I think you mean dim and foggy.
Yes.
And
we'll
so
get to that.
It's just really, really crazy outside.
Yeah, we got really bad icy weather. I just came back from Mexico last week, and when I got home from Mexico, on the way home, there was like 6 inches of snow. Very
Clay was
bad
down
weather.
In Cabo sunning at the beach.
Actually, it was. We were at 6,000 feet elevation in Mexico, freezing cold.
I bet it was.
Luckily, Clay read like a part of the memo and brought a jacket. Like, you know, it was almost one of those deals where it's like, I don't need that much clothing. But I did. Very cold. So I came home to bad weather. And
kind of a life mission statement for Clay.
6, 7, 8 days later, it's like very icy right now.
We got snow last week.
I've been a lot of places with the Newcombs where some member of their family didn't have a coat or a jacket.
It's a problem.
In the dead of winter.
It's a problem.
Story.
Or a pillow.
Yeah.
We won't say that's a problem.
Partly why we have such an eclectic group of people. You've heard a few voices that you wouldn't have recognized, and you've not heard some voices that are typically here. Gary the Believer Newcomb, it's about a 3-hour drive, 2.5-hour drive for
Arkansas
him to get here.
Shut
so
down.
The state of Arkansas
shut down. We told him not to come. Brent Reeves, we told him not to come. And so we have some very new folks. Misty Newcomb's here. Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker, is here. Josh, introduce your guest.
So, a very special guest that I'm honored to introduce and honored to have been married to for almost 25 years,
Woo-hoo!
Mrs. Christy Spielmaker.
Well, hello.
Christy, so great to have you, Christy.
Thank you.
This is a long-time dream of mine to have Christy Spielmaker on the Bear Grease Render Podcast.
We've tried a lot to get her on
here. Yeah, you wouldn't know it, but we've tried a lot. So, very we're so happy you're here, Christy.
I'm She's so happy to be here.
Yes, yes. And we've known the Spillmakers for decades.
Decades.
And so we've raised our kids side by side with the Spillmakers.
Traveled.
And so I can't wait to hear what you have to say about Tecumseh.
I'm ready.
For those, it's possible that people are new to our podcast, the Bear Grease Podcast. We are a documentary style history, anthropology, hillbilly, hunting, conservation, musical playing podcast. But every other week we have a group of people that comes together for the Bear Grease Render, which is what you're listening to, where we talk about the last week's episode. So we're going to talk about Tecumseh Part 2. So, great to have you, Christy. My guest, well, I have two guests here. Misty and I have two guests here. Our first guest is Jessica Llewellyn, our dear friend of many decades as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, Jessica?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so, I stayed the night at Jessica's house for the first time when my 16th birthday?
I think so.
17th birthday.
17th, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 17th birthday. Right. That was my first time
in
to ever
Fayetteville,
meet
Fayetteville when you came
Jess
up.
Lou. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still remember sitting in the basement living room chit-chatting.
Yes.
And being like, oh, I love this gal.
This gal too. So, really, she's been, our kids that were born in the hospital, she was there at the hospital for our daughter's births. And was here very shortly after at our house when our sons
Jessica,
were born.
Tell the world what you do for a living.
Oh, I'm an architect. Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you work on?
Commercial. I don't do a lot of houses, but I've gotten over my 20 plus year career, I've gotten to do a lot of different stuff, but right now I work for a firm that does a lot of commercial development. So right now I've got some projects with universities around the state. Locally, I've gotten to do a really cool movie theater and some offices and restaurants and things like that. And I really enjoy my job. It changes a lot day to day. You know, some days I am, you know, boots and hard hat, and some days I'm on a computer, some days I'm on phone and meetings, some days I get to color. I mean, like
literally color.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you do you ever draw stuff like on a napkin, like you see in the movies?
Rarely. Architects usually have paper and pens these days. Okay. You know, I do have a purse. I have an advantage over those guy architects
who purse. Don't carry a purse. So you carry paper.
I usually have paper. Hey,
pack and paper.
I'm kind of an architect myself, Jessica, as you know.
Yeah.
Do you carry a purse?
Do you remember when we built this office, I said that this was going to be a celebration of architecture?
Oh.
Do you remember that?
It's coming back.
Right answer.
Like this wasn't just going to be a building. It was going to be a celebration of architecture.
Yeah.
But, so, funny story about Jessica that I heard her telling yesterday was that when she was in college, is it okay if I tell this story?
Sure.
When she was in college, at her house, they hosted a band that came and played a concert in her house. And the dude set his cymbals on fire in her house.
Do I know that dude?
This was that same living room that I first hung out with Misty. This house was legendary in Fayetteville at the time, by the way. And it was not once that we had a band play. It was like
concert video.
Like, kind of. It's like this was the days before cell phones and smartphones. And in those days, you would chalk the sidewalk. You'd write stuff on the sidewalk if you want people to show up with chalk. And
like outside your house?
On campus.
On the university.
And you would tell them what the address.
Yeah, so you didn't even have to say the address. People knew this house.
Wow.
It was nicknamed the Slacker House. When I lived there, we were not slackers. People that lived there before us were slackers. But the house was known as the Slacker House. So we could literally put on the sidewalk, Slacker House, Friday night, 8 p.m., and the band name, and people would show up and watch bands.
Wow.
Yeah, so fun.
It was fun.
So how did they light their cymbals on fire in your living room?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Like spray them with
lighter fluid.
Top of a big cymbal?
This gel that you put on it, if I remember right, that you kind of smear on it, and then you can light it on fire.
Some Sterno.
You know, I'm kind of big into, like, sensational ways to get attention. I'm thinking about burning, like going on a squirrel hunt and, like, lighting my saddle on fire.
Or flaming arrows.
Flaming arrows. Yes.
Flaming arrows.
That's what I'm talking about.
Jail, Jessica.
Okay, I'll see what I can find out.
Yes. So
you could also just order fajitas at the Mexican restaurant.
Whoosh. Have fajitas delivered to your meal.
Our final guest, and certainly not least guest, who's been here before.
Yeah, true story.
But our dear neighbor, also friend for decades, our favorite pastured poultry farmer, Terrell Spencer.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
Good to have you, man.
Yeah, it's like being on the practice squad and everybody gets the flu, so you get to play.
Yeah. That's
true. Right. Okay, we need to like say like Terrell Spencer is a direct replacement of Gary.
Yeah,
Wickham.
Exactly.
So you need to be thinking about what Gary
like
would
the understudy.
Say and try to like fill his spot. Christy, you got to replace right. Brent Reeves.
Well, those are big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
They're actually not. It's like a size 8.5 or 9.
Yeah, I think. Got small feet, big beard, big overalls.
Yeah.
But no, Terrell. So you're, I just called you Terrell. I never called you Terrell.
It's all right.
Spence is your name.
We're close enough. You can use first name basis. Well,
I remember when my kids found Terrell out Spencer that is. Spence's last name was Spence.
Yeah.
And they looked at me and they said, his mom named him Spence. Spence.
Spence.
Hey, tell me about the what you're wearing around your neck.
This whole thing? I forgot I had it on.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah, it's a Grand Champion Rooster Call medal. I won Ooh. A couple weeks ago in Dallas.
So, wow. Yeah.
At the
American Pastured Poultry Producers Association.
APPA.
APA. Yep, they're... They had a big conference, about 350 farmers, and I
you
first
took the
place,
gold.
I took the gold.
Well, I mean, you got to let us hear your rooster.
Man, yes. I would blow out every microphone on this.
Oh, it's okay.
Do it.
Yeah, you could even move it if you wanted to.
No.
No? Okay. Don't move it.
Full, I mean, okay.
full force.
Yeah, turn it up just a little bit. Turn it up just a little bit.
My voice is a little hoarse.
He's got to stand up to get this out.
Yeah, you got
to. Okay.
Oh, he's standing
up. Oh, excuse me.
Well, okay. We're filming now.
I was doing it earlier on top of the holler with my dog scaring vultures.
Okay.
And he really likes that, so my voice is a little blown out.
Okay.
Wow.
That was
an wow. So I'm assuming they liked loudness over
well,
like
there is
technical
a,
nuance.
There's a fella, Christian Alexander. He
hey,
got
turn
up.
Your mic down just yep. a little bit there.
There's a fella, Christian Alexander. He's a farmer in North California. And he came out, and he called, and everybody sat down, right? And what I did, I couldn't compete with that, but there were multiple. You could do multiple calls. So I just did a barrage of mediocre calls and got my score up. So I did, like, a turkey hen, a gobble.
Okay.
Like the little... That turkeys did. I did a poultry predator, an owl, and a crow. And
there you go.
And I got my score up to take them down.
Okay.
So our sons play basketball together.
Yeah.
Spence and I.
True story.
And when either of the boys score, I will owl hoot from the stand, and Spence will crow call.
Yeah.
And it's our goal that one day, when the boys score on their team, the whole stadium owl hoots.
Right.
I mean, that's my goal anyway.
It happened. We were in a really rural school district, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And we were making our calls, and someone from the other side.
Yeah, answered it.
Responded.
I'm just saying, like, I love it. It's wonderful. One of the things that we are playing for a new team this year. And I'm a little concerned that they're embarrassed of us.
Well, guess what? You get what you pay for.
Not the kids.
You got some kids from down here. Their dads are probably going crow call. Okay.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Misty, why don't you read?
Okay. So I get, you know, like updates if someone in our family hits the papers. Like I have this setting where it'll send me the interwebs.
It's a setting on Google.
Yeah,
right?
It's a setting on Google. So Google if someone's in the news or something, I'll get an alert so I can see pictures and stuff like that. Well, I've got Clay's name on there. And so I got an update that Clay Newcomb and Misty Newcomb were in the papers.
Was that 1997?
Sorry. Old habits die hard.
Did you cut it out?
No.
It was on the internet.
Put it in your scrapbook.
I quickly realized that what I was looking at was an AI product, artificial intelligence. And so for people who don't know, there are these newly created robots, recently created robots, who go around and it's clear that what they do is they pull articles from all over the internet. And they make like summarizations of those articles, but they don't want to plagiarize, and so to not plagiarize, even though some would say this is still plagiarizing, they just swap out some of the keywords.
So basically, it's a full article that has like a 500 word article that was a bio about me and Misty.
Mainly about clay.
And it, go ahead and read it.
And it starts with...
That's all we need.
And it starts with... Mud Newcomb grew up and was launched up inside the Ouachita Mountains as a seventh interval Arkansan. And so already I'm like, where on earth did this article stem from? What translation? He's a tracker, donkey skinner, naturalist, and provincial social spectator.
Provincial.
Okay, let's stop right there. In my bio at Meat Eater, it says that I'm a seventh generation Arkansan, born and raised in Arkansas. So it said
brought
he was
up,
launched up in Arkansas.
Yeah. Yep.
And then in that bio, I said I'm a connoisseur of rural culture. So what did they say?
They said he's a tracker, a donkey skinner, naturalist, and provincial social spectator.
Provincial social spectator.
Yeah. Was a connoisseur of rural culture.
Is there a
culture.
T in that word?
Connoisseur.
Sorry, hey, Christy. We don't talk about Clay's pronunciation.
Fantastic, Christy. You nailed it. There's a lot of words that I don't say right.
He is an essayist, movie producer, and this might be one of my favorites, the host of the Bear Oil webcast.
Bear Oil webcast. Well, and then Donkey Skinner.
Yeah, Neil Skinner.
Yeah. All right.
Are you offended that they thought that donkey would be a synonym for mule?
Yeah. I mean, come on, AI bot.
Dirt Newcomb has been hitched.
Dirt.
So they've switched now. Dirt so it was clay, earth, Dirt Newcomb has been hitched to his greater half, Cloudy Newcomb. for virtually 10 years, which that is wrong, 22 years. Mm-hmm. Earth Newcomb's important, completely different, has been joyfully hitched to him. Mud and Foggy, like investing.
Mud and Foggy.
Yes. Mud and Foggy. That needs to be on a license plate on the front.
Exactly.
Airbrushed Mud and Foggy.
Mud and Foggy.
You see what it's doing. So it thinks my name is Newcomb.
Yeah.
And it thinks clay is just a word that can be, you can use synonyms of. And Misty as well. Foggy.
Mud and Foggy like investing energy with their family inside the Ozark heaps of Northwest Arkansas.
Ozark Mountains.
Heaps.
Okay. I'm not going to go too much more, but they do at one point call me Foggy Newcomb again. And by the end of this, my name has changed to Dim.
Dim Newcomb.
Dim has four children.
Kind of love a good nickname.
Robots are kind of
Foggy.
Mud and Foggy.
I wish my name was Mud Newcomb.
I mean, Mud Newcomb.
That should be your new band name.
It should be Mud and Foggy.
Mud and Foggy.
It's a great band name.
Yeah.
Mud and Foggy.
Dirt Newcomb would be great, but our friend
Dirt we have
Dirt
a friend
Garrett in, Smith
mm-hmm.
already has that one taken.
Yeah,
the Meat Eater cameraman. Great guy.
Wonderful.
So he's already Dirt, so we're already past that.
If you ever race like three-wheelers, your name needs to be Dirt Newcomb.
Yeah.
Yeah,
three-wheelers.
I can picture airbrushed t-shirts, too.
Yeah.
With Mud and Foggy.
Mud and Foggy.
Caricatures.
Christy, can you tell us what you do?
Yeah, I am in supply chain, global supply chain, so I work with a supply chain company mainly in the retail sector, doing import type work.
Mm. And an avid hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Fisherwoman.
Yeah.
Actually, she is.
So for years, I kind of still think you're in trucking.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
I did that for about 13 months, but it stuck.
Well, no. And you really weren't a trucker for 13 months. But you worked with truckers in a major retailer in the country.
That's right.
Yes. Now, Christy's very important.
She's extremely important.
Christy, you have such a great story because you went to college when you were older.
I was 30.
30 years old.
We had three kids. Yep.
Two foster kids.
We
had two foster kids during part of that time.
When did you graduate college?
2012.
How old were you?
I was 34.
And then now you're like running planet Earth.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
She's a bigwig.
She is a bigwig, for real. Yeah. I mean, she is. She's a big shot. And there was a time when she worked for a local retailer that some have heard of. She doesn't anymore. Can
right.
I say their
yeah,
name?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
She used to work for Walmart, and every time I would go into Walmart and they wouldn't have something that I wanted, I'd send yeah. her a picture so she could fix it.
Yeah. I would get that. I also, we have a very close friend who would call me and be like, I bought this fan and I love it and I have 10 of them and I bought them all 10 years ago and I can't find them anymore. Can you figure out what happens?
I know for sure which friend that is.
I cannot figure out what happens. No idea.
But don't forget that really Christy Spielmaker is also quite the fly fisher woman.
I am.
So it's nice to have the presence of another fly fisher in the room.
Yeah. I'm here to support you.
Mm-hmm. Where do y'all like to go over in Central Arkansas?
Mm-hmm. And
don't
and,
tell us your spot.
And north of here.
North of here is pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jessica, now your connections to hunting?
Well, I should probably confess I've never hunted.
Mm-hmm.
I fished a little bit when I was a kid, but I hooked my brother one time and then no more fishing after that.
Right.
But I very much enjoy, I grew up in family that hunts and fishes.
Your dad's a big hunter, brother's
a big
hunter.
And brothers, and I reap the benefits of having family and friends that are hunters. Like, I was telling some friends at work this morning that in my freezer right now, I have moose meat, I have buffalo meat, I have deer meat, I have chicken, I have all these things that people supply, and I'm very grateful. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now, I love being outdoors.
The coolest story... or a cool story that Jessica's dad has, who I've hunted with your dad before, is that he knew Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
I hope I'm getting these right, Dad. I hope I'm getting these right.
It's close enough.
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up in Central Arkansas. There was a guy who was a singer in the 70s in Central Arkansas, and my dad was learning to do tile, like for bathrooms and kitchens, and he was working on that guy's house, and Elvis came to hang out, and Elvis would like just go sit like on the toilet with the lid closed, and chat with my dad.
Who knew that would be his final?
Elvis lived in Memphis.
Yeah,
and your
Memphis
dad
just
lived
a
like,
few hours
like
away.
An hour and a half from Central, well, where your dad was at in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, apparently, this was when my dad was young, probably still in high school, and Elvis and this other guy were probably in their 30s, and my dad was always into cool cars. He had a cool car then, and they convinced my dad to take him cruising downtown so they could drink and wave at girls from the back seat.
There you go.
Elvis.
Yeah. And then later on, my dad was racing boats at a lake in Central Arkansas. He did this regularly, and it was kind of a big deal back then. And Elvis would be the MC or special guest or whatever. And before it started, he'd find my dad and say hi. And then he'd be like, I got to get out of here. There's too many people. And go back to the, you know, where the cool kids go.
Elvis Presley. I'm big into Elvis now, Josh.
Oh, really?
I've heard about this.
When did this happen?
About 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Is there going to be a podcast about Elvis?
Is that going to be the next series?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, there's Elvis actually a hunter?
There's actually a great quote by Ted Nugent about Elvis Presley.
Ooh.
And?
He said, if Elvis had just been bloody up to the elbows about once a year, he'd still be alive.
Oh.
Yep.
Remember that?
Mm. Yep.
Because he wouldn't have needed all the drugs
that
killed him. He'd have got a natural high, Jessica.
I believe it.
Elvis.
You should hear Clay's Elvis call.
Oh, man.
I've had a Helix Sleep mattress for over 2 years, and it is for sure the nicest mattress that I've ever slept on. I've slept much better in the last 2 years, been more comfortable than I have for my whole life. And that's true. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/clay and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet and won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people.
Christy.
Oh, I just want to give a shout out because
yeah.
I was on a business trip last week or the week before.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport and I saw a Bear Grease hat.
Nice.
In the wild. We call that a Bear Grease hat in the wild. It was sighting.
Sighting in the wild. And I just thought, well, I'm gonna talk to this gentleman and just see if he'll talk to me. And I was like, sweet hat. And he's like, thanks. So where'd you get it? And he was like, Mediator website. Like, kind of. Like, I'm an idiot.
Like, where else am I going to get one?
I was like, oh, okay, cool. Do you listen to the podcast? And he just looked at me. He goes, religiously. And I said, oh, you listen to The Render? Yeah. And I said, well, sir, my husband is Josh Landbridge Spielmaker.
And I just was like, it was. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And he was like, what? And then he wanted to be my best friend. And so that was Dr. Blake on his way. He's going to be a doctor at the Children's Hospital here.
Wow.
And
wow.
He's about to move. And so I just wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Blake and repping the
go,
Bear
Dr.
Grease.
Blake.
We salute you, Dr. Blake.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had multiple farmers at the APA conference come up to me and they'd listen to the soil.
Oh,
podcast.
Really? Yeah, the soil episode.
I don't remember any of their names, but
yeah.
But you know who you are.
Yeah.
I think that we should start a new section where we just call out people's names. That's how every Arkansas event, that's how all the Arkansas, social events, you go to an education conference and they stand up and they just kind of point out all the people in the room they know.
Right.
Who are. And it's like,
building that loyalty.
Yeah. It's like, stop it. Hey, anyway, I think we should do that on the Bear Grease podcast.
I got an email this week about a guy, and forgive me, brother, for not having your name in front of me, but this guy was at a fur trading. He was at a fur sale in Idaho.
This is a thing.
And he was
fur sales.
Yeah. They were selling and buying furs, and he was wearing a Bear Grease hat. And the seller, he was wanting to buy some furs, if I remember right. And the seller saw his Bear Grease hat and was like, "Bro, loved the podcast and gave him a discount on the first.
Oh, wow. Wow.
There you go.
I thought you were going to tell me he was going to use it as currency.
Yeah,
like I would sell this that would be awesome. If you also yes. give me Dogecoin. The hat.
That would be good. That would be good. Hey, where are we at on our coonskin hats, Josh?
I've been working diligently on them. I've got four left to make. They're about one third made.
Okay.
So I just need to finish them up.
Okay. At some point we're gonna sell.
Yes.
These coonskin yes. genuine Ozark dog tree hats.
By next render, I will have a completion date for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And they might even be done. You never know.
Yeah. We just got to figure out what we're gonna do with them. Hey, kind of as an announcement too, just to remind everybody, March 4th in Northwest Arkansas, Bentonville. Is the Black Bear Bonanza. It's going to be big, man.
There will be a coonskin hat.
There'll be one of Josh's coonskin hats.
Anyone with a good owl hoot could win.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be the prize for the owl hooting contest. I'll be one of the judges. And there's going to be a live Bear Grease Render podcast recorded there. Potentially going to be some live music.
Oh, by Mud and Foggy.
By Mud and Foggy. Yeah.
Mud and Foggy and guests.
Maybe, maybe, nice. Maybe. But it really is going to be a great day, man. Those guys have done a great job of putting together a really fun event. It's all day. I'll be there all day. Misty Fogg will be there all day. Foggy.
Misty Fogg's hey, funny every time.
Who's going to be there too?
Who?
James Lawrence.
Legendary. I'm looking forward to seeing James Lawrence.
He messaged me the other day. And when I get a text message from James Lawrence, I feel like he shouldn't be text messaging. Like,
does he have a flip phone?
He literally, well, he's got a real phone now. He's got a good one now. But when he comes into town, he can message. And he messaged me and said, hey, I heard you're having some kind of event. And I said, yeah. And he said, me and he's coming.
All James right. is coming. Nice. That's awesome.
I'm looking forward to that. So, Tecumseh. Man, as everybody knows, I said it on the last render, I've never taken such a long period of time to build a series. It took me over a year, maybe even a year and a half, to just put all the pieces together and get the right. It mainly had to do with my guests, just like lining them all up, and then I've got them. And rarely do I have this many like great guests on a single podcast.
A lot of really quality guests.
Chief Ben Barnes of the Shawnee.
Yeah, that's big.
Robert Morgan, New York Times bestselling author, Robert Morgan, who I joke about. And if I am ever on the New York Times bestsellers list, I would like for all of you, my dear friends, to, when you introduce me as New York Times bestselling author and my friend, Clay Newcomb.
You mean Mud Newcomb?
Bestselling
author. Dirt.
I've got to write a book first, though.
Right, okay.
And then Peter Cozens, who is a fantastic author and historian. And who am I missing?
Dallas.
Yeah, Dr. Dave Edmonds, who has spent his whole career. Dave Edmonds is in his 80s and is just a really fun, a lot of energy, just so much knowledge. You almost are like, oh, slow down. Like when I put the headset on, he just took off. And he would be like four steps ahead of me, and I'd have to stop him, and then be like, "Hey, let me ask you this little bitty question." He was great. Yeah. He was so great. So rarely do you have that much time to invest into one episode, but it's such a complex topic. I am quite certain that when this is done, there will be people on both sides of this topic that would think that I did it a disservice.
Oh, really?
I think so. Because I said it at the end of maybe the first episode or the second episode. I was kind of just, at the very end, kind of made a plea for empathy to the listeners to just be like, hey, there's no way that I could get this totally right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I am telling this story through the veil of my understanding, which is dim, and
not to be confused, with Misty,
foggy view of this, because it is very sensitive stuff. Because we're talking about American history. We're talking about a people that were a lot of injustice was done to them, But you're also talking about a people who, the Europeans, who in many ways are overlooked for the stresses that they were dealing with as they were trying to move into this land that they would have viewed as almost unoccupied. And so it's not a justification for that, but that's just the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, poverty and all these factors were pushing these people. And it's so there's like all these different sides of it. It's
and you're
hyper
also,
complex.
I think the other aspect of this that's challenging is that you don't have history necessarily. The history books were written not by the Shawnee.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And 100%. So one of the big challenges that you have is you're talking a lot about a different worldview and a different paradigm that they approached the and we don't have that worldview clearly documented like we do the Westerners, even people who are trying to present it from the Shawnee perspective, still that's not their that's not their native language. That's not their native worldview. And so it's tricky.
Well, there's a bias in every mm-hmm. angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really would be this way in any part of history. There's always a bias in the way the story is told from any angle.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're going back into a time period when there was very little documentation of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, even about Tecumseh's life, I got this book that's, 2 inches thick about Tecumseh that's got like every possible thing that was ever known about him. And much of it is even the stuff I reported on about Tecumseh's birth and all these things. Man, we're going off of like a thread.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, for instance, Tecumseh's birth and like him being born under a comet that struck, that went across the sky in Ohio. Two people told that story. Now, those two people were close to Tecumseh. It's really, for that deep of history, it's like pretty solid evidence. His grandson, Thomas Wildcat Alford, told that story to somebody. He said, my grandfather was born under a comet, and his name means this. But closer to Tecumseh was his brother, essentially his functional brother, who was a white kid that was kidnapped and brought into the Shawnees, raised as his brother that knew English. This is stuff we didn't really even get to get into. Stephen Riddell, who lived with the Shawnees for 17 years and then like went back into the white world, he is a big source of information about Tecumseh because Tecumseh died when he was 45 in 1813. And so I don't know how long Stephen Riddell lived, but presumably longer than Tecumseh. And so when he died, people started asking about him. And Riddell was like, I was his brother and I could speak English. And Riddell told that story. But it's not like there was a video of it.
Or Facebook posts. Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Even at that, you're going off of one man's memory.
Right. True.
You know? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've told the story and Chrissy's like, that's not how it happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Josh is a compulsive liar.
You're welcome. Well,
I'm just kidding. Before we move further, I think I just want to log that I wish we would have named a kid Wildcat.
Absolutely. Man, yeah, I wish we had named a kid Mud, Dirt, Wildcat.
A lot of great.
Our youngest daughter, names out there. Had she been a boy, she was going to be Wolfgang.
I was grateful. That would have been good. I was grateful
because you guys had a bear and we were going to have a wolf.
That would have been so good.
Bear and a wolf. We definitely would have.
I'm still holding out for you guys for another kid.
Yeah, thanks for that. If we do, I'm going to bury an antler with the umbilical cord.
Bam.
That's all I know.
Yes. So we'll start off the discussion. So we're talking about part two, but if you want to reference part one, that's okay as well. So part two was basically Tecumseh's life from about 1795 to 1812. Okay. It was kind of after he was established. The first podcast established his birth, the context of his birth, and kind of there were no official wars going on to speak of until the War of 1812. That's like the first like big American war that like were like, yes, they were fighting. But his whole life was filled with warfare, skirmishes, tribal warfare. You know, that's something that we didn't get into that my dear friend Steve Rinella called me today and talked to me about was how much intertribal warfare there was. Like they were a warring people. Like, I don't want it to sound like
they were surprised by.
Yeah.
They didn't understand warfare.
In this second one, Robert Morgan talked about how the Native Americans viewed warfare differently than the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more ritualistic. And, you know, you can paint this romantic picture of, like, these people and the way they live, but they were very brutal at times to mm-hmm. themselves.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of fighting. Just fighting was part of it.
Yeah. I think that's even speaks to how much more difficult it probably was for Tecumseh to bring together all the different tribes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it could be easy to think, oh, it's just gathering up people that are all very similar or whatever, but there's right. a lot of difference between those different tribes.
Exactly. There was incredible difference. And a lot of the tribes hated each other just for the sake of hating each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And were taking land from each other, you know?
Even though, like, as you talked about it, there's like this hegemon that we've all been exposed to of like what we think a Native American is. And it's like in the plains with the big feather bonnet, you know, and that
right.
you don't think about like in the East, in the woods and yeah. like marching with the British. And, you know, like when you see Tecumseh, it's like nothing like what right. I, as a boy growing up in the 80s, or watching Westerns, what yeah. you think, you know, so it's like that thing has to even get moved before you can even start looking at and thinking about him. That's what I found myself like. I really don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like it's so foreign to me.
Yeah.
And it's such a huge part of our history that's just we're ignorant of, mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. 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 So the way we'll do this, I'm going to go to each one of you and ask you what stood out to you. And so maybe by the time we're done, we'll have like talked about lots of different parts of it. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christy, can I start out with you?
Yeah, you sure can.
What stood out to you
yep.
in this podcast?
Okay, so I think there were probably two parts that stood out to me. The description of the movement of people, like being in one location and then spreading out all the way across the earth.
Mm.
And then, so couple that with then in the first episode, when it was, I can't remember who it was, but described that like Tecumseh would have approached people and things from what is similar, not what's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you start, you kind of like start putting it all together and you're like this whole movement of people from like one central kind of location out across the earth over many, many years, obviously produced different mindsets and thought processes and worldviews. And it just makes me sit back and wonder, like, does the worldview always have to conflict? Or could there have been, you know, when I think about this, could the Western worldview and the Native American worldview have come together to produce something better than what we even have today, right?
Mm.
Instead, it was conflict and one had to, you know, quote unquote, win out or whatever.
Yeah.
And I sit back and I think about that because in my world, like it's all about like, I've got to go build relationships and build rapport and go mm-hmm. find common ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what if I just approach people and thought, hey, there just is common ground. Like, you know what I mean? Even in my daily life, just thinking about how does that apply? So I was impacted by that. I thought that was pretty wild and just interesting to think about. But then even just what you just described, I mean, Tecumseh had to go and talk to people who also tribes who had different worldviews. I don't know about worldviews, but different views and
they
try
did.
To go mm-hmm. find common ground.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it was an interesting kind of like, how does it practically play out? So I was impacted by that. And then
can I say something to that? And then
yeah.
you'll get to go again.
Okay.
Cause I'm very glad you brought that up.
Okay.
Because if that was such a, the idea, like taking it all the way back to the human diaspora
right.
out of where yeah. we started.
I was afraid to try to pronounce that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I pronounced it wrong.
You got it.
I'm sure I pronounced it wrong.
I think, I think you nailed that one, actually.
Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. Diaspora.
Well, that it's such a wild thought to think uh-huh. that we are the same species. We're the same. And two people left in separate. And it's a very simplified version of the human diaspora.
Yes.
Two people left in different directions. They didn't know they were on a round planet.
No.
And time separated them
yep.
for so long that when they met on the American frontier, they were vastly, their thought of what it meant to be a human was vastly different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was this conflict. And to me, like I could just sit and just think about that and just be like, wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wild. And then, you know, I talked about the Tower of Babel in the right. Bible, where language was the way that God basically stripped people of being able to collaborate together.
Yeah, right.
And how today that is so, I mean, language is everything. But yeah, Jessica?
I was just going to say that the part where you guys talked about language and the way is the language influenced thought and thought influenced language was really striking to me. Y'all know I'm a big movie watcher and so many things take me back to movies. But yeah, there's a movie called Arrival that was about like aliens landing and this woman trying to communicate with aliens. And that's one of the big ideas in that movie is like how communication shapes thought and thought shapes communication and back and forth. And I thought that the way that was described was really interesting and captured that idea. And it's true. Like the way we talk is a reflection of what we think, but it also influences the way we think and back and forth. It's a cyclical thing. And so just being aware, just in a practical life.
Was this going to be one of your favorite topics for this?
Yeah, this was one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Hold that, because I want to talk about language.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll talk more about
that. That was one of my
I've got a couple things to say.
We
got
to go back to Christy, though.
Okay.
Okay, my second
one.
My second one was Logan's lament.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Yeah. I just thought that was pretty, I mean, I thought it was beautiful, but like so sad.
Yeah.
And just that thought of like, man, he really treated people one way and was horribly, you know, unjustly treated by that same group of people. And I
liked how Ben Barnes said, he said, your soul can't help but be moved after you read that.
Right.
He said something really striking about how.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Jessica, ladies first.
Oh,
absolutely.
Okay. Impacting thoughts.
Yeah. And I was thinking a lot about how language influences thought and thought influences language and how that's the same for everybody. That's a life principle, you know? It's
right.
Like you got to be conscious of how you talk because it does influence how you think. And you also, you can tell a lot about how someone thinks by the way they talk. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was really interesting here.
Or the decrease from 6,000 languages to 250. Yeah. Was that the statistic?
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
In what, how, what time
by
frame? I can't remember.
Like okay. In the next 75 years.
Unbelievable.
He said every week there is a language crossed off the list that dies. Like in we'll talk about this more, I think, in the next episode, but. There are around 250 people on planet Earth that speak Shawnee.
Right.
And what he said to me that really got my gears turning was he said that monolingual speakers have a hard time understanding why speaking multiple languages is important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
and he
right.
said that languages allow us to view the world in a different way. And when you really practically think about what that means, this would be an example as I've thought about it. Imagine that you're walking down a country road and there's a creek gurgling off to the right hand side and you're just kind of, it's peaceful, there's birds, and you're just having like a nice walk, a contemplative walk, and you're thinking about important stuff in your life. And I don't know, how would you describe that in English? I'm not really asking for an answer, but I'm saying you would probably have to like, make a lot of different thoughts mm-hmm. and say a lot of different stuff and take a lot of time to like describe like kind of a complex thing that's happening. Cause the creek, a creek doesn't really affect like my family, but maybe I'm thinking about my family. Perhaps there is a word in another language that you could say, I went and XXX. And that, and you would be like, oh, you were walking down the road and there was a creek babbling beside you and you were thinking about your life and mm-hmm. contemplating and yada, yada. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's like there's words that describe stuff that we don't have words for.
Yeah.
You know, we've always heard that French is the language of love. And which Spence is shaking his head. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yes or no? Shaking your
we
head.
We felt
yes
like
or
Ozark
no.
is the language of love. but point being, there's ways that they capture parts of life that the English language just doesn't have the ability to capture. And so I thought about that because that's what I try to do as a storyteller, as a writer, it's like you're trying to describe this really complex life we live, and there are words in other languages that say stuff that we don't know how to say.
Yeah. I think up in Alaska, there's a
Koyukon.
Maybe I don't know who it is, but they have like 27 words for snow.
Yes, I've heard that.
We've got the one. Right. I think about one of the lessons that we go through with our kids at school in one of the classes I teach. Hardy, he gave her a hearty welcome. What do you picture?
Like a loud welcome.
Okay, what kind of people?
I don't know.
Who's given the hearty welcome? Who do you picture giving that? Like what's
a friends and family.
Okay, what's he wearing?
Santa Claus suit.
Really? Interesting. Plaid. Okay. And you would be amazed at how many people say plaid. Huh. Or flannel. You would be, like almost 90% of the people say that. He gave her a cordial greeting.
Oh, he's wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Bow tie.
Okay. Yeah. One of those words, hearty welcome, when you like trace that phrase, when you take specifically hearty, when you trace that back to its origins, that is the origins, I think it's a Nordic language that was spoken by peasants. Hmm. Cordial welcome, I believe, stems from French. Like if you go into that. And so you end up with generations beyond where I can't even, I teach this, I have it in my notes. but, you know, we don't know where the origin of those words came from, but we still infer the same
things.
Yeah,
we don't consciously know that it came from that, but we know that. Like, Josh Spillmaker would give a hearty welcome.
It puts an image in your head of Josh.
He's a peasant.
Yeah, and he wears flannel. Right. But you get those images in your head centuries after those.
Wow. So language carries a lot of stuff with it that maybe you don't even recognize.
Yeah, for sure. And so I thought that was a super interesting thing. And if back to your point about you know, you're trying to give this perspective, this is a language that is dying. Or greatly is like an endangered language. And so we don't know the history because we don't understand what they were saying. We don't understand what was being communicated. And that's a real valuable part of the bias to inspect and to understand.
And, you know, I alluded to this in the podcast, but I think it's a hard judgment to say that Tecumseh would have been the greatest orator in American history. Like, that's probably a stretch.
We've had some real winners.
Because we don't have any recording of it.
Right.
It's hard to, know. Yeah. But what I think historians are trying to do is throw the guy a bone and say the way that he organized people, like the evidence of strong oration was there so strongly that we can assume in the way people talked about it.
Right.
But the Shawnee language carried him. And now he would have been speaking some of his stuff in English, but most of his stuff, for him to inspire his people, he would have been speaking Shawnee, most likely.
Right.
And in other tribes, he probably would have spoken some of their language. But, you know, just kind of like this language carried this incredible orator. So, you know, like what was inside of it?
Mm-hmm. You know?
But interesting. Jessica, second thing.
Okay. I liked... When you guys were talking about change, you know, in my profession, I'm an architect. I interact with tons of people at different scales of development, you know, city planners and things like that. And change is a big topic, especially in a region like where we live, where like we are on a trajectory of growth and it's not going to stop. And, so one thing that's talked about a lot in design and city planning and architecture is like things are going to change. They're going to grow or they're going to go downhill. And so the point is we've got to grow in the right way. So I was just thinking about like there are ways to keep what's good and still adjust.
Mm-hmm.
And because change is going to happen. Like,
And I would say change is good. But also, like, we've got to be anchored by things that don't change. And it's really, as I was listening to this, I was listening to, was it?
Dave Edmonds that you were talking to. Yeah.
And as y'all were talking about it, I was thinking, like, you know, going back to my grandparents, there are things that they believed and that they thought that were not good. Not good for them, not good for others. They were restrictions, mindsets that restricted them as individuals and restricted their scope of experience and that we could, I mean, going back even further, think about the change that having like heat has brought us, and the change mm-hmm. that good solid medicine has improved.
Water.
Indoor you know, plumbing. Yeah. And there's some things that I'm not going to go without.
No, exactly.
That I'm a big fan of, and I don't want to go without. And I think that we can romanticize the old ways or the traditional ways. Personally, like I think I am very much so in the camp of people that could easily do that, and so it was an interesting take as I was listening to the two of you talk on the podcast. That was a big thought going through my mind, is like, well, change is good, but also there's some things that shouldn't change, and there's some things that you don't want to change, and there is just this constant tension. And I think like in our home, we would say migration is a value, something that we value, like the ability to migrate to higher perspectives and things like that. And that's actually like a declared value of system of our home. At the same time, we're very much so deeply anchored to ancient principles and ancient value systems that we tell our kids, this isn't going to change.
Yeah.
This is mm-hmm. what you, and so I just think it's an interesting tension there. Like it's not something, and you can see why wars are fought over it.
let me do a little cleanup on that section, because that section was one that potentially somebody could have a hard time with, because what Dave Edmond was doing was he was trying to help us in modern times here in America understand at a very small level what was happening to Tecumseh. He was not, because he talked about coal miners losing their way of life, and rural America losing their way of life.
Yeah.
And the problem with that argument is you could say, wait a minute, you're saying coal miners not being able to dig coal anymore is like, you know, the genocide of a people.
Yeah.
You see, that's not what we're saying. And that's not what he was saying. Right. He was trying, he did a good job, I thought.
I thought so too.
Of bringing it down to something that we could sort of identify with.
Mm-hmm, right.
He wasn't saying this is just like that. And, you know, somebody that was just looking for a reason to be mad at us for this podcast could say that.
Well,
so I just want to clean that up, because what it did so powerfully for me hearing that is to be like, yeah, Tecumseh wasn't, like he was fighting for a way of life. Like he loved his people, his land, just like we would love our people in our land.
Yeah.
He was a man, and it hurts when that stuff is taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to say
that. Yeah, I think that brings me back to what Christy was saying earlier. Like it doesn't have to be, what we have is that one side over the other side, but there's probably a beautiful connection there somewhere that was missed, that both groups of people could have survived and had healthy balance of holding on to what the old and growing with the new at the same time. It's hard to picture, right? Because we've grown up in this world that's defined by that, especially in North America. And
I think it does survive though. Like some of those Native American tendencies, I see it in my farming. You know, I'm working with nature. You know, I see it in hunting and conservation. Like, because that Western way was, you know, we kill all the passenger pigeons or carrier, whatever, you know, like we extinction. But yet you see like this model of hunting that's arisen. And I'm not a hunter, but I love them, you know, and it's like you see this model that's arisen of preservation, and I could kill more, but that would hurt.
Right.
So I see that in my farming. I think there's other, you see like some of the rural community stuff of neighborness and taking care of your neighbors, even though it may not benefit you directly at that moment. Like, I feel like some of that may, I don't know. I feel like it is in there, you know, it's probably subtle, especially like Ozark culture, because I mean, like that's where it butted up. We're in right next to Oklahoma, you know?
Yeah. For real. This part of the world, there was a lot of overlap of Native American and poor white.
Yeah.
Yeah. White farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of overlap. But, and that goes back to what I talked about in the first one. I think what makes us American, because if it had been all these Europeans that came over here, it would have, like, why are we so different than them today? I think a lot of it had to do with Native Americans. That culture.
Yeah, I agree.
It's hard to put your finger on it. But, Spence, impact, favorite part of it.
Yeah, I think there's a couple, like, just the language. Like, mm-hmm. There was a point in my life where I was almost bilingual, you know, like, and, like, this caused me to go back and look at that and just realize, you know, like it was Latin, like, if I wanted to eat, I had to speak in Latin.
Okay.
You know, like, it was pretty hardcore, and just even going back and, like, I still read my Bible in Latin, and it feels different, like, things are transmitted different. And so it's, I don't know, it was sad to hear about the languages. Like, when you were in Northwest Arkansas, you can drive to Tahlequah, and I think that's a Cherokee homeland, right? And you see all the like, just letters I didn't even know existed. You know, it's really cool as they're and it, but it's that struggle, you know, to preserve that heritage. And you just think of, like, when you hear about all the languages being lost, it's like, man, those are, like, facets of humanity that are growing dim. You know, like, we lose something every time one of those goes out. And I don't know, that
it's
part
such a functional
me.
Problem though, because, you know, it's like when you hear about the Shawnees, you're like, well, I could learn Shawnee. And then it's like, you probably not really. I mean, would it be
possible? It's almost like that language is a way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, you have to change the way you think to be able to communicate in the Shawnee language.
Mm-hmm.
I think too, like, one thing that I was able to identify with is I've got property on both sides of a river, and I love rivers. Like, I did grad school work. I really value Ozark rivers. They're incredibly unique. They're just so underestimated in just how spectacular they are. There's more species of fish in Arkansas than most countries. Yeah, you know, like, it's...
Take that, world.
Yeah. Or, like, the entire western...
Put that in your fish pot.
Yeah, the entire western U.S., you know, like, an order of magnitude. And, like, in one of my properties, like, we have... There's a neighbor who just kind of, like, just goes and just digs up in the river, and we have a really good section on our part, and it affects it. And, like... I feel helpless sometimes because I value
what they're doing.
Upstream. Yeah. And honestly, in the Ozark streams, what happens downriver affects it too.
Yep.
But he has a right to do it, and I can't stop it. And, you know, I'm not even going to talk to him because I don't think it would be there. And it, you know, my, it's just, there's a little bit of helplessness that you feel there seeing something that you value being destroyed callously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so someone can play around or do the things they want. And so I wonder, like, what must that have been like, you know, for the Native Americans? Like, even, like, it wasn't during Tecumseh's time, but, like, when the extermination of the buffalo, like that, or bison herds across, you know, like, and just being powerless. You know, I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's just something that spoke to me. Yeah.
Wasn't there a quote in the first podcast about, like, an insatiable hunger for more, like, whether it was land or I just think about, what is that? You know, I talk to people sometimes today and I think, man, you have a fantastic life. You have good kids and, you know, they work really hard and you ask them and they're like, well, I'm just trying to get my kids better. And I think, what's wrong with your life? Like, what?
Yeah.
Better what? You know? And I think Tecumseh's, like, maybe I'm over romanticizing this, but, like, he's trying to preserve a way of life, also a mentality that says we don't have to go grab up. Like, what does that in the long term look like if his kids and his kids' kids and their kids are always trying to feel this need to grab, grab, grab?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, that is sad to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, when's enough enough?
Yeah.
You know, that really is a dramatic difference. We didn't talk about it in this one. Robert Morgan covers it, and I read it in his book on Boone. But he talked about how there's accounts of different tribes believing that the white men were insane for trying to find gold. Like, just like, why? What are you after? Like, tell me again what you're looking for. Like, why you came across the ocean? And this idea of wealth, like storing up wealth, accumulation of wealth, was just like, what? That's bizarre, man. You know, we've got what we need right here, you know, and that can be over romanticized too. And there was a scale of influence of the cultures too. Like, later in the time period, there was probably some of the tribes that were very influenced by money.
Yeah.
I mean, and Dave Edmonds talked about it. They were getting money from the government. Mm-hmm. They were getting supplies. They were settling down and farming. Yeah. There were more people. And this is what you got to say and understand. And again, it's so complex. We're talking about Tecumseh because he was actually an outlier. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the tribes wanted to assimilate. They were getting money from the government. They had a good land deal. They, you know, a lot of the tribes wanted to assimilate. Like an oversimplification of it would be all the Native Americans were wanting, you know, were fighting against America. There were actually a lot of tribes fighting with America against the French and other Indians. So it's like so, and that's why in a 2-hour podcast you just can't cover the whole thing. I told somebody the other day. I said, I'm for sure going to get it wrong in some places, but what I want people that listen to this podcast to take home is that when they think about this place that we live and think about the Native Americans, is that it is wildly more complex than you could ever imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, you know, when you think about the language and you think about some of these tribes getting money from the government, and then you have this guy like Tecumseh that is standing against the trend and in some ways probably knew, you know, I wonder if he really thought he could win. Yeah. I often wonder about that. Like
if he knew he was going to be a martyr.
Those guys had something inside of them. And that this was very real, that to die was like noble. Like his brother, Chisiquah, that said, I'd rather die have the fowls of the air pick my bones.
Than die in camp.
Yeah. And that's something that was deep inside of them. And so I wonder if Tecumseh, I wonder if he really thought he could win. I think he probably did. I think he probably did.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
Josh, favorite part.
So I was also very, very impacted by the discussion on language
with
Chief Ben Barnes.
That, Josh.
But I do want to say the other thing that is, you know, adjacent to Tecumseh's history is I was real fascinated by how they talked about the aspect of community, mm-hmm. and how, you know, as a Shawnee, he would have had many fathers and many mothers and many brothers. And I thought, what an amazing, beautiful thing that really, you know, I don't think that Tecumseh could have been who he was without that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And recognizing the fact of the fingerprint of so many people and so many interactions and relationships that produced who he was and gave him the ability to see a united Native American front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, in short, I think that really impacted me. And, you know, it makes me think about our lives, Christy and I, with our kids, and how we have really, you know, raised our family together closely with friends, you know, with you guys and our kids and with other mm-hmm. people that we know and care for dearly. And have shared life and shared community together, and it's produced these young people who are competent and responsible, and mm-hmm. and have really themselves gone against the trend of the age. I just that really impacted me seeing that thing inside of him.
Mm-hmm. Love that,
and also the identity, right? Like he tells that story about Boone, and just like I think we're a society that doesn't have that. Like you're a man now. Like a lot of cultures have, like, you're a man now because you go through this, like, and like how Boone went through the purification, I think you said, and now you belong to the tribe, and there's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there's very few, I think, institutions, like, I think maybe baptism would be one, like in Christianity, but where you have that that clear demarcation of identity, and that was powerful to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Misty, have you gone yet?
Not really. I've just commented on others. I think, you know, I think the whole, I love hearing what everybody else has said. I could comment really on what Spence and Josh said, but I know we're kind of running low on time. I think to me, as I look at this, as I look at the whole podcast, and it kind of goes back to what you said a few minutes ago, it does. And I hope at least it does this for people. It makes you see things to the best of your ability to extract this information and to extract an accurate history from Tecumseh's perspective. And I think, you know, there's kind of a couple of different schools of thought or camps. I grew up hearing one exclusive camp, which was, you know, that drive that, you know, Americans have that was very much idealized in the world and in the places I grew up.
The
you know?
Pioneer.
Yeah, kinda, the pioneer. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I think there's some really good stuff in that.
Yeah.
Like there's some stuff in that has been really meaningful, even inside my life as an adult, just to metaphorically. So, I mean, there's some good stuff in that. It's also, when I hear these stories, and I do feel some of the influence of of those things still in our culture, and you realize, man, that's also some really good stuff. And I want to understand that guy's perspective as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tecumseh is a hero. And it doesn't mean Tecumseh is perfect. And it doesn't mean the Native Americans were perfect. Or I think that you can have these conversations without, I think you did a good job on that. Like, I actually think that you did present that.
Shucks.
Yeah. I think you did a good job on that. Like, as I was listening to it, I thought, yeah, this helps people see, because it is a different mindset. Like, it is, we don't speak that language. We don't have those words, those symbols, those rites of passages like you just described. And so we need people to help interpret that for us. Mm-hmm. But I thought what Dave Edmonds did with comparing it, and like you said, it's not the atrocities that were committed, but just a people fighting for their way of life. I thought, as I listened to that section, I thought, yep, I can see exactly what he wanted. I'm sympathetic to it, and I see how he is just as much a hero for fighting for his way as anyone I know. And so I thought it was, you did a great job for that. And I don't know, like, when you're thinking about solutions, okay, well, how do you resolve all this? How do you, and that's where I think it gets really complicated. Yeah. And, but I think as far as the value of understanding someone's perspective and understanding, you know, what he was trying to do, I got all sorts of respect for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All sorts of respect for him.
Yeah.
You know, it's real interesting for me inside these series with these guys. I, you know, these actors that do this, what's the type of acting when they, like,
pantomime.
When they like, become the person.
Oh, method acting.
Method acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I do not do that in a podcast.
No, sir.
I do really feel, like, connected to these guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I really do. And it all, I'm all, when we ended the Boone series, like, I really was sad. Like, I don't know if you could hear it in my voice at the end of the Boone series, but, like, I was almost in tears, for real, in this office by myself.
It's a true story.
Mm. It's the same way with Tecumseh. Like, I'm already, like, wishing that it was longer. Because right now, in this 6-week period, like, I just am thinking about him a lot. Like, the other day I was driving in my truck, and again, the biggest challenge with time and history is that you hear about somebody that died in 1813, and they aren't real to you. And Tecumseh was a human. He was not a comic book character. He had major flaws. He had some major good stuff. And I just envisioned, like, literally Tecumseh riding in my truck with me. Just like, and being able to communicate with him. And just like the little sliver of thought, just like, this is a real person.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it was, I say all that to say, I really feel like I kind of dive into these guys and wish it was longer.
Yeah, that's what makes you a great storyteller, Clay.
Well.
Thanks, man, Jessica. Two compliments. Wow. Two Dog compliments.
The love flying around in this room right now.
And if you could get Tecumseh an interview for the podcast, that would be great.
Oh, man. Yeah,
that would be killer.
Hey, I'm not going to try to foreshadow any, but we will be having an induction. I'm not going to say who, but we will be having some inductions into the Bear Grease Hall of Fame very soon.
It's probably me and Christy, right?
Whoa.
The rooster call wasn't that good. That's yes. Respectfully
there will be two new members to the Bear Grease Hall of Fame, which we don't throw that around lightly.
No,
we that don't. Is serious.
After this series.
Can we also, I just think, adopt from this podcast series the whole, what is it, arrow flights? Like, distance-wise, if Josh is like, hey, Christy, where are you? And I'm like, 4 arrow flights from the house.
Yes.
I feel like that should become a part of.
I am so bad with time, space, estimating the number of people who are at things, the size that, I mean, that would be very hard for me.
I just make it up.
Well, but if you went out and shot a couple arrows, an arrow flight's pretty, I would say it's about 200 yards.
Okay.
And 200 yards would be about 600 feet. 200 yards would be
how many,
less than a quarter of a mile.
How many arrow flights?
About 800
to
900
farm.
Yards and a half mile. So a quarter mile would be like 450 yards.
What are we, so 8 arrow flights to Spence's house?
Not that far. Probably like three.
Three arrow flights.
I think it was a quarter mile south of the town.
I just thought that was kind of epic.
Yeah, I thought it was too. Well, thank you all so much for coming. Jessica, what an honor to have you here.
Thanks.
Yes. Thanks. Christy, what an honor to have you here.
I was happy
Terrell
to be
Spencer,
here.
Terrell Spencer, what an honor to
Back
have you here.
Back to the practice squad.
And here we are, Chop Liver
Chop
over
liver
here.
Chop Liver over there. You guys are the best.
Oh, and you even left me hanging.
Foggy and Josh.
Damn, and Josh.
And you didn't even mention the part where you talked about the land bridge.
Yeah, you did talk about the Bering land bridge.
Oh, it probably hurt him that Josh wasn't interviewed on that. Josh has always wanted to be interviewed.
Another opportunity wasted to have me on the podcast.
One day, Josh. One day. All right, guys. Thank you so much. And there'll be one final Tecumseh episode titled Tecumseh's Death.
Oh man. Way to bring it
down.
Are you
going to make us cry?
I don't know.
He might make himself cry.
If he does a good job.
Alone in his office.
Is there a flaming arrow somewhere in
I
that?
I hope so.
Yeah,
that
would
be awesome. There should be. There should be.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.